Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined today by a friend of mine, a guy who I've known for a while now, a coach from California, who has done a great job in putting some great resources out there, and I've been able to learn a lot about what he does. And one of the things he's talked about over the course of time is this idea of moving from worst to first. He's been a part of three big turnarounds and programs, and I think he's got some great stuff to share today. So joining me is Coach Rick Stewart. Rick, it's great to have you here.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me. Big fan of your work in USA Football. I'm excited and actually humbled and honored to be on this program.
Rick, let's get started with your coaching journey, because I think there's a lot in your background and what led up to what you would call a transition, a transformation of you as a coach to really move to and evolve to where you are today. But talk to us a little bit about your start in football and your background.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think in anything in life, whether it's coaching or just being father, or just a human being, you know, we're always a product of our past experiences, right? And it's a culmination. You know, so real quickly, I was not that good kid in high school. My senior year, my priorities were definitely out of whack. I was a three-sport athlete, but I wasn't focused on the things that we were supposed to be focused on. Got my wife now. We've been married for 33 years. I don't know how she's stuck with me, but got her pregnant. She was my high school sweetheart, got her pregnant my senior year. So I was that knucklehead that us coaches struggle with. I wasn't a bad kid. I was a good athlete. I think my coaches genuinely cared about me, but I was definitely going down the wrong path. And one of the things looking back on that experience was my coaches, not that they should have, it wasn't their obligation. I was making the bad choices, but my coaches didn't really go out and talk to me about being a better person. It was, when every time my coach talked to me in high school, it was always about me as the athlete and my role on the team and not me as a human being. And so fast forward, I get her pregnant. I join the Marine Corps and we have three beautiful children. I'm going to college on GI Bill. And I get my first job at McFarland in 1998, the movie with Kevin Costner. Obviously, that movie wasn't about me. Kevin's a little bit better looking than I am, but it was about a cross-country coach that was on our campus at the same time. McFarland was 0-24, and they only had 13 players. I just got out of college, and I was going to say yes to anything in that interview to get the job. So I walked in for a science interview. I walked out as the head football coach, and I wasn't ready. I had not been a freshman coach. I had not been a JV coach. I had not been a coordinator. You know, I coach a little freshman football back in my alma mater, and now I'm the head football coach of a really downtrodden program, and it was awful. I was making mistake every day. I didn't even know what I didn't know. The athletic director leaned on him really heavy. And so in that off season, I really had to do some really intense soul searching as far as what I needed to do. And unfortunately, I think like with all first year coaches is I was focused on the playbook. I thought that, hey, the way I'm going to turn this around, the way I'm going to improve this thing is, I need to have a better playbook. I need to go find a system. So I'm going to clinics, and all I'm focused on is X's and O's. And we did turn around. Well, you know, we improved our work ethic and obviously me seeking out and getting a system. That's not a bad thing, coaches. You definitely have to have solid fundamentals, and your X's and O's have to be solid. We were able to turn that around and we made the playoffs. I was there for 5 years, and we made the playoffs for only the third and fourth time ever in their school history. And it was a very rewarding experience. The adults at that town couldn't get along, and there was a school board recall, the superintendent got fired, and I worked for six principals in 1 year. And so I moved up the road to a school. They were 0-27, Corcoran, school of about 800. McFarland had about 600 kids. And Corcoran was 0-27. And they had recruited me to go up there because we had beaten them pretty bad in game one. And I went up there, and they were 0-27. And now my evolution as a coach is I'm starting down this journey of understanding that you build your players from the inside out, and you have to generally be concerned about the player and being a servant leader. But I'm not there at that journey. But John Wooden was having a big influence. I read that Tony Dungy book about being a servant leader. And anyways, that's we're 0-27, and fast forward, then second year we make playoffs, we're undefeated champions. I really enjoyed it at Corcoran. It was very, very far from my house. I was driving an hour one way each way. And my hometown, Porterville, the job opened up, and they actively recruited me, and I went there. And Porterville never won a playoff game in their 100-year history. 110 years, they never won a playoff game. And they had won 8 games in 5 years, I believe, when I got there. And that's really when I surrounded myself with some really good people. My assistant coaches were men of high character, had a really good booster club that we built from the ground up, and those people were of high character. And everything just started culminating. And I really – that was the job where I really started focusing on, the player and intrinsic motivators and understanding that the coach's job was to teach, not to coach. The coach's job is to help players and teams reach their goals, whether it be in life or off field or on the field. And when you genuinely help people achieve things, then some great bonds happen. And, you know, we won 40 games in the 5 years I was at Porterville and played for back-to-back what we in California call section titles. There was no state playoff system back then. And we lost both section championships, but that's not important. We were able to turn around and build something that the community and the kids and the admin and everybody was really proud of. And since then, I've really been on this journey of giving back to the game and helping coaches. And I'm still learning. Even this morning before the podcast call, I was reading some stuff on player motivation and player development and the psychology of coaching. But that's kind of been my journey. I jokingly have called the worst of first guy because for some reason I always end up taking over really bad programs. And I say we, not me, we. You know, you surround yourself with really good people and we're able to turn those programs around. So that's kind of my journey that's led me to this point in time in this podcast.
Well, Rick, I'm sure there's a lot of things we can unpack along the way that you have learned. As you look at those situations, you've started to develop some strategies, especially in the area of, like you said before, coaching that player from the inside out. What things did you start to implement as a coaching staff? Things, because I think you would agree, you need to be as strategic about this as you would about deciding what you're going to put into your playbook. So what did you guys start to develop as far as your strategy for this, your methodology, those kinds of things?
I think the frustrating for me, because I'm very, very strong A-type, OCD type of personality, and I'm an ADHD type of guy, is the patience. And I still don't have enough of it. You know, you want things done yesterday, and you want things to happen on your timetable. And I think the biggest thing that I still struggle with, but that we as a coaching staff had to understand that things were going to happen on our timetable. We were going to work hard and we were going to love our kids and we were going to put things in place, but these relationships that have to be built, they just can't be happen overnight. There's not some magic speech you can give and all the problems are solved. And you really have to wait for opportunities, unplanned moments in your players' lives, and then if your infrastructure is in place, you're set up to help that player overcome that obstacle, whether it's just flunking his classes, girlfriend breaking up to him, or something more tragic, maybe like a death or divorce, things like that. And if you have this system in place, where A, the players feel comfortable coming to you with those problems, and then you have an infrastructure in place with your booster club and your coaching staff where you can help those players overcome those problems. Well, every time you have that situation arise, you're building, you're strengthening those bonds. So I'd say the first step is like you said, you got to surround yourself with really good people. And so when I go and hire coaches and interview coaches, and in California, you really don't hire coaches. And it's kind of crazy. You go to an 0-10 over program in California and you inherit the coaching staff that basically just got fired. I mean, once in a while you can maybe trade them out, and we have lots of walk-on coaches, people with real jobs, real estate agent, police officers, so forth. But really you're inheriting those coaches. So you're just like you inherit your players in California, you inherit your coaches. So the first step is changing the mindset of the culture of the coaches and getting them out of the playbook and getting them not consumed with X's and O's and building up an infrastructure in the off season. So those coaches are reaching out to their players on a weekly basis. We do some overnight trips, do a lot of team building stuff. Once a month we do fun stuff, paintballing, dodgeball, and things like that, so that we create situations where our players and our coaches could bond. And then it's just weekly messages from me to those assistant coaches, getting them to transition from 100% playbook to at least 50% playbook, 50% player centered. So that's really the step one is changing the mindset and the culture of your coaches, and then making sure you have things set up in the off season, not just weight training. It can't just be about weight training, where you're creating situations where players and coaches can build what I call love and trust, and build that brotherhood, so that when adversity hits and when bad things hit, you've already got these bonds formed. So that's probably step one, is that. And I just got to say, coaches, it doesn't happen in your championship. You'll spend all off season doing it. And I always tell coaches, you want to bat 300. If I write down 10 of my most problematic kids on my roster, maybe they're not on my roster. Maybe they're kids I want to get out for football, but they've got some serious problems with drugs or grades or family that's preventing them from excelling at what we want them to do. If I make a list of 10, my experience has been, I'm really happy if I can say 3 or 4 of them. I want to bat 300. And I'm talking about the really, really problematic kids. And then there's a shift. You always have your 10 or 20% on your roster. They were us when we were players. They absolutely love football. They're going to play if you go 0-10. They're going to play no matter who the coach is, because they just love football. And those 10 or 20% of your roster, they're going to grow up to be coaches. Then you've got your middle 80%, and they like football, but they don't love it. It's not their life. They're going to go to practice. They're going to show up on time. They're going to do what they're told, but they're really not going to do anything outside of your schedule as far as football, as watching film or going to camps or going to clinics and things like that. Then you have that bottom 10% that you are totally changing their mindset, and that's where I'm trying to bat 300 of them. And the goal is to take that bottom 10% and move as many of them into that middle 80% where they like football and they're responsible. And then take as many of that 80% and grow my top 10 or 20%. If you're over program, a bad program, you've only got maybe 5 to 10% of your roster. Let's say 5%. Well, my goal every year is to grow that so that at year 3, year 4, now I've got 20%, maybe 30% at my top that truly love football. They love their teammates. They love their coaches. And it's bigger than football. But I think the message there, when I get asked, where do you start at? You just roll up your sleeves and start rolling. But it's not going to happen on your timetable. You just got to be patient, because the kids turn around and they're changing their mindset and they're changing their attitudes. It's going to happen at different stages, depending on who that kid is and where they're at, and how much they're willing to embrace it. Some of it's cultural, depending on, the different cultures you've got. And so they're all going to take this journey at a different pace. And that was probably the most frustrating thing to me as a coach, because I have this nice calendar and every day's planned out, and we're doing weight room at 6 a.m. We're doing this, we're doing that. And Saturday we're doing this camp. We're going 7-7. I don't want everything on my schedule, and it's just not going to happen on your schedule. So, where do I start at? To sum that up, you definitely start with your coaches. You've got to start with your coaches, and then you just roll up your sleeves and do some things with your players to build relationships and build the love and trust.
Rick, I'm sure what you did in your first stop is distinctly different than what you did the third time you turned around a program. So I think by that point, you probably had some ideas of, okay, this is what we need to do to start here. This is how this all lays out. As you said, be patient with it. But now kind of seeing, I guess, some of those steps along the way, what did you learn? What's the difference from that first time, second time, now to the third time? And what do you recommend, you know, to coaches, I guess, to, like you said, you didn't know what you didn't know, I guess, to overcome some of that? Because there's a lot of coaches who do get hired out there without having a lot of experience. They're put in that position. Maybe they're in the school. They're the teacher in the school district. The job is theirs if they want it per their contract. What do you recommend to those guys?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, yes, Keith, you hit on the nail. My analogy would be this drastic. I was on Pluto at that first job, got on a rocket ship, and literally I felt like went to an entirely different planet, even on the other side, you know, going from the distance from Pluto to Earth. I look back and I still have good relationships with those players and those first turnarounds, and they jokingly and very fondly talk about stories and things that we did. And I just shake my head and think, oh my God, Rick, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? I would say one of the biggest transformations from the first job to the third turnaround was that the first one, especially just getting out of the Marine Corps, I had lots of rules. I had like 3 pages of rules. I was always drawing lines in the sand. And I'm very embarrassed to say, I actually cut some players. I actually kicked them off the team and collected their equipment, which is philosophically, I'm totally opposed to that. In fact, my theory on that, my philosophy on that is you never remove a player from the team. You might have some very severe consequences. You might remove him from the team for a week. You might bench him for 5 or 6 games, but he always knows that he's still part of the team and there's always a door open for him to rehabilitate and get back on the team because the kid needs football more than we need him. So I look back at some of those kids that I cut, and once I cut them and collect their equipment, I no longer had any influence over them. And I don't have relationships with those kids, so I don't even know how they turned out. And that will always bother me until I die, that those kids that I didn't reach into their lives and I just said, that's it, you broke this rule on page 3, I'm collecting your equipment. That's probably the biggest thing. I would say the new coach is just getting handed the keys, which literally that's what happened. Keith, that interview I went into for science, it was middle of July. I had got my degree in biology in June. I hadn't even been in a credential class yet. All I had was a bachelor's degree, and I passed a state test called the CBEST, which was just basic skills test. That's all I had. And so in July, I walk into this interview, and I get hired as head football coach. Like, August football is starting like in 2 weeks. I only had one coach. It was me and a D coordinator, still a dear friend of mine to this day. We were the only two coaches at that first practice. So I get it. I get that coach has been hired at the last minute, and he's not prepared. I would say if I had to give that coach advice, you really just trust your gut. And when you make a decision about your team, decide as if they were your children. You know, as a parent, nobody gets handed a book saying, here's parenting 101, and you've got to discipline your child. And every time you have to spank your child, and I did spank my children when they were little, and you got to discipline them, and you ground them, and you take things away. You know, you go to bed that night, and your heart's just broken because this is your child. But yet, you know your role as a parent is that you have to guide them. And I would say that you just trust your gut and make those decisions on with your players on as if you're children. I would definitely say a couple of quick advices: don't have a bunch of rules. I now follow Lou Holtz. You know, Lou Holtz basically has 3 or 4 basic rules, and mm-hmm. his number one rule is don't embarrass the team. You know, don't put yourself in a box with a bunch of rules and a bunch of if-then statements. That was a huge mistake. Pete Carroll's book, Win Forever, he talks about the same thing. You know, it's just some basic things. Don't let your team down. Don't embarrass your team, your family, your school, and just have some general rules that everything then falls into. I would definitely recommend against cutting a kid. Always figure out a way that somehow the kid is part of the team. Now, he may be removed from the team. You may not have him at practice for a whole week, but always have a rehabilitation where the kid can get back in. Gosh, if it's your first year and you just got handed the keys, just trust your gut. And then in the off season, swallow your ego, swallow your pride. I used all 10 of my sick days that next spring. All I did those 10 sick days was I called in sick and drove to schools that had successful programs. And I just shadowed that head coach for an entire day. I just told the coach, hey, coach, just do your deal. I'm just going to shadow you. And I watched how he interacted with kids and how he ran his weight room. And then obviously we got to chat a little bit. And you seek out people that have already done it. The books and videos are great, but there's nothing like actually just going to a college practice or a successful high school practice and just getting to know that coach. What you're going to find about almost all successful coaches is that they are about the psychology, they are about intrinsic motivation, and that all successful programs, I feel, that at least all the ones I've been around and all the highly successful coaches, the playbook and the X's and O's is like number three or four on the list. I'm not saying it's not important, but it's number three or four on the list. And when I got around those coaches and spent a day with them, that stuff started rubbing off on me. So trust your gut, don't cut kids, and seek out mentors.
Rick, I know the kids are a huge part of this. The coaches are a huge part of it. You know, you and I said we weren't going to dive too deep into it, but I think it's worth mentioning, you know, the boosters, the administration, especially the parents, and being able to get them to be pulling in the same direction. Because I've seen those situations before, I'm sure you have, where you get the kids on the same page, but maybe you have some parents who are pulling that apart, or, you know, you built something up and essentially it gets torn down because everybody doesn't understand what's going on or they're not aligned in the same direction. How do you do that? What's your recommendation there as far as the things you've learned along the way?
The program that I'm envisioning, I have to have the parents involved. And one of the things as a parent, I really believe this, parents deserve to be part of their children's life. And you only have two choices: keep the parents at a distance or embrace them. And I think you embrace them, because when you keep them at a distance, if you're coaching the way that we're talking about in this podcast, you want the parents in your inner circle. And I always wanted the parents at everything. I wanted them at all the overnight trips, all the 7-on-7s, all the team dinners, because the more the parents were around us, they really saw our hearts and that we really love their child. And you just, over time, you win the moms over. And people talk, you know, we're just human beings. And then when you do get a parent who's blasting you or is upset about something, it's really because they don't know you and they don't understand you. And what I found is those other parents that I brought into my inner circle, they started defending me. And the other thing is, the what can really undercut, especially a new coach, is parents running to administration and they just bypass you. And then the administrator doesn't want to deal with it. No administrator wants any phone calls. In fact, unfortunately, I think when they hire coaches, what they're looking for is they want to hire the coach that they're going to get the least amount of phone calls about. Well, if the parents are in my inner circle and they have my cell phone and they feel like they're my friend and I'm their friend, I've broken down those barriers and they feel more comfortable approaching me first if they're upset about something and not running to admin. So actually, even though it takes more time, and I always say I have an open door policy, I don't always like who walks through the door, but it's an open door policy. And by bringing those parents in, it actually in the long run saves you a lot less headache, because they're not going to get on social media and talk crap about you if they feel like they know you and you have a relationship with them, just like the players. And then if like I said, if somebody else gets on there and starts attacking your coaching staff or your program, those parents are going to defend you on social media. And so, and the program I'm talking about is very time intensive. To take these boys, we always go on 3 camping trips. We do all these team building stuff. We have our team dinners. We have our candlelight ceremony. I can't do that by myself. And my coaches can't do it. That's a lot of work on the coaches. We need a group of 10 or 20 really hard charging parents to help us organize those trips, to drive, to cook, And so number one, I need them to build that program. And number two, they deserve to be part of their child's life. So don't shut them out. And by not shutting them out and letting them in, they're going to get on board if you really are coaching them with a sincere heart. If you're phony and you are about X's and O's and you are about the scoreboard, you're not going to win those parents over, especially the moms. You might win the dads over because dads are competitive, but I don't care how competitive that mom wants to come off. The number one thing with any mom is just a genetic thing that's in their DNA is their mother bear is going to come out. And they're going to gravitate towards coaches and human beings and teachers who have their child's best interest in heart. So you got to embrace that. The social media part of it is an absolute nightmare, and I don't have all the answers there. It's definitely created some issues, and I think you just want to be in front of it and definitely have a social media policy and the way you're going to deal with it, and you want to educate parents and players. Constant, it's going to have to be constant education about being proactive and positive on the social media and just put some basic mechanisms in place. And I don't want to get into that in this podcast. And then just making sure the parents don't go running to administration every time there's a problem. Make sure the parents know that, hey, come to me first, like come to our coaching staff first, and let's try to solve it before you go running to the athletic director or the principal. I would say with the administration, same thing. Administrators, just like you as a head coach, treat your administrator the way you want your assistant coaches to be with you. You don't want to be surprised. The administrator does not want to come to work on Monday and have some phone call about something that happened on the weekend where their coach, one of their coaches, embarrassed the administrator. So be proactive. I don't care what time of the night it is. If something really serious has happened, you know, I'm getting a hold of the administrator right away so that the administrator, we're in front of it before they get any phone calls. If you as a head coach have screwed up and you get a hold of your administrator right away, you're remorseful, just like you want your players to be with you, and you explain to the administrator what happened, you made a mistake, you feel bad, you're willing to face the music, and I think the administrators will appreciate you a lot more being proactive. I'm talking to my athletic director on a daily basis, and I would like to have a principal that I could talk to on a weekly basis. And I want both of their cell phones. And we have an end of the season formal evaluation. I have another meeting with them in January when I come back for Christmas break so I can tell them my new vision. I'm going to do another reflective meeting with both of them probably in April or May. So they're very clear on what we're doing in the summer. They're always getting copied on emails. They always have itineraries of where we're going minute by minute. They just don't want to be surprised. I think if you don't surprise your administrator, you're going to be in good shape with your AD and your principal.
Rick, one last thing as we finish up here. You've taken three programs from worst to first. As you've gotten them out of the basement and you got them to that point where they're winning, what was tougher, coming out of the basement there or getting them from average to the top?
Man, Keith, this is why Keith Grabowski, guys, is Keith Grabowski. This is why he is who he is. He knew exactly what questions to ask. That's a great question. It is no doubt harder to stay on top of the mountain than to climb the mountain. And then you will slip because you can't win the championships every year, which is why all your goals and all your everything about your teams and individual goals and team goals have to be based on effort. Scoreboards don't make winners and losers. Once you make your goals on win the championship, win the district, get to state, win a ring, well, then what happens when you do that? Then what's your goal the next year? I mean, and then it's going to be hollow because nobody's going to just keep winning it every single year. First of all, make your measurement of success on effort and those kind of things. But no doubt, I talk about four levels of when you take over a losing program. Your first thing is getting your kids to hate to lose. And I'm talking about just daily competition. Hate to lose in the classroom, hate to lose in practice, getting them to hate to lose. Once they learn how to hate to lose, then you got to teach them how to win. They don't know how to win. And I have to show them how winners act. We go visit other high schools, playoff practices. We make sure we go to a college spring practice. I've got to see our kids and see them modeling, see that somebody else modeling how winners behave to them. And I show pictures of Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Tom Brady. And I say, look at these people outside of their lives, and look how they dress, look how they act, look how they interview. And so teaching them how to win and not win on the scoreboard, just be winners. Then the third level is getting them to expect to win. They get out of bed in the morning and they're going to ace that test. They're going to kill it in practice. They're going to kill it in their relationships. They're going to kill it with their family and be a great son. Like, they just get out of bed expecting to win. Keith, you hit it, though. The fourth level, learning how to handle winning. Either two things are going to happen. They're going to get big-headed, and now you got to deal with pride and humility, or complacency. And I will say I'm guilty. The fourth level has eluded me. At all the programs, when we turned it around, we didn't deal with complacency. We started getting a little lazy and not working as hard as we were working to get there. We kind of backed off a little bit. And there's no doubt. And I'm going to tell you right now, coaches, when you get in and take over an Ofer program, nobody cares. You're not drawing nobody in the media is giving you any attention. You're not on social media. You've got a few parents that are coming around, but not very many. There's no alumni anywhere because they're embarrassed. So you kind of are just going along and you're turning your thing around and you're not getting any attention. Nobody's making phone calls. Nobody's calling the AD about you. You're not on social media. Holy moly. You start winning. You will feel like you're getting attacked on a daily basis. We had that 12-0 team in California. We were ranked six in the state, and we were number one in our section. As far as outside of our brotherhood, I felt like I was getting the most attacked that year. And here we were undefeated, right? I'm thinking by all society's measurements, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And we were just getting vilified. I mean, it was crazy how many phone calls and emails, and the AD would come to me daily. And it was almost a running joke with us about how much attention he was getting about the football team. He goes, man, Rick, now that you're winning, people care. Now that you're winning, people because you're winning, nobody can just say, hey, great job to your players. Great job. No, if you're winning, you're cheating. And all of a sudden we're doing steroids and we're recruiting and we're doing all the things. And people start because if somebody doesn't have their own parade, they find somebody else's parade to rain on. I say that, you know, they'll go pee in your Cheerios. And so no doubt, once you climb the mountain, you have a whole nother set of problems: complacency, pride, humility, and ironically, the attention that a winning program draws. I mean, look at all the stuff the Patriots and Belichick and Brady go through. You know, how many people accuse Tom Brady of just being a cheater and being a man of low character? Well, really, anybody knows Tom Brady, he's not like that. So no doubt, Keith, great question. Yeah. Staying atop the mountain was definitely harder than climbing.
Well, Rick, I know you've compiled all this stuff, put it together into a program that you have launched on CoachTube. I guess kind of give us an overview of what coaches could go out there and get and learn more from the things you've done. It's not just necessarily about going from worst to first. You have laid out a plan for that, but really it's about program building.
It's always been a passion. After I got out of those first two programs, and I already talked about, I didn't even know what I didn't know. It's always been a passion of mine. And now, you know, and most of the coaches listening know about my health issues. I've had to kind of step back and away from teaching and coaching, because of my health, and it's allowed me to really dump into this. And so, yes, we're going to be coming out of this whole system, because I want to help the next generation of coaches. Our game is under attack. And if we don't start changing the way we do things, and I know we have, especially with the tackling. USA Football has led it with the tackling and making the game safer than it's ever been. So now I want to make sure that the next generation of coaches, I want to find the Rick Stewart. I was a head coach when I was 28 years old. I want to find the next Rick Stewart who's 28, 29, 30, he's got his first head coaching job, or he's aspiring to be a coach and any sport, and even assistant coaches. I want to make sure that I put some resources out there, and so I can get back to the game and help those coaches. And this program, I want it to be turnkey, where a guy can, you know, plug it in, I've given him the roadmap, just not only from all the mistakes I've made, because, you know, mistakes is life's best teacher, But I've been blessed where I speak for all these Glacier clinics, and I think I've been flown to over 50 high schools to be a consultant. I've learned from so many other great coaches, even yourself, Keith, as our friendship. And it's time to give back to the game and make sure the next generation of coaches is equipped. And we're going to cover it all. I'm going to talk about how to build your staff, how to deal with parents. You know, it's got to be a player-centered program, which was this podcast about. Your training program, both physical strength and mental leadership and character, how to deal with admin and faculty, an academic game plan, how to embrace your community and alumni and your youth and just putting all that together, because it's very overwhelming to a first year coach. I was very overwhelmed. In fact, I'm not embarrassed to admit that, you know, my wife actually served me divorce papers, which is why I left Porterville, because I wasn't balanced, and it was so much work on the one end. I was falling out of balance and keeping my priorities. If there's anything I'm going to leave you, the coaches also in a personal set, coaches, make sure you're really in tune with your core values. And if you don't have core values, go on a journey. Brian Kite, a great, great curriculum. Randy Jackson, Culture Defeat Strategy. Like I said, John Wooden is great stuff. Pete Carroll has influenced me. You go out and find some stuff and know what your core values and build. Make sure that you know what you stand for before you get in front of your team and start preaching to them what they should stand for. I want to have some stuff out there where I can give back and help those young coaches on that journey. Every coach is at a different place, and you know, it will be on Coach Too, but this is a passion of mine. I'm not really putting this out there to make money and sell a DVD. I want to make sure we're giving back to this game, and that the next generation of coaches can keep this game alive, because there's no doubt the game is transitioning. The game as we know it is changing, and we need to change with it. So, yeah, coaches. So if you know, get a hold of me. I'm all over the internet. Email me, find me. It'll be on CoachTube. You know, there'll be some links, I'm sure, on this podcast. It's my passion. It's what I want to talk about with coaches more than pistol wing tee or 4-2-5 defense is this stuff right here that we talked about today.
Well, Rick, I appreciate you taking the time and all you're doing to give back to this game and to teach other coaches.
Thanks, Keith.
Check out our new Twitter at FBDEV Coach. We're doing some great stuff there every single day. We're adding to it as we go through the off season here. We want it to be a great resource for coaches out there. Also, check out our systems at footballdevelopment.com if you are looking for some cutting-edge techniques. We put it together in our advanced tackling system as well as our contact system. I also highly recommend you checking out our system for building culture, and we partner with Focus 3 and Brian Kite, and Brian's done a phenomenal job in helping organizations around the country, from corporate America to the education world to teams like Ohio State. If you read the book Above the Line, all of that book was about what Brian and his father Tim did to help out the Buckeyes. You could go get our system at usafootball.com/focus3.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.